We are on the eve of yet another transfer portal, and it's going to happen. You may have noticed that we've already had a transfer portal of our own. We've brought in Joe Cook, got rid of Ian Boyd. He decided to sign somewhere else. He is moving. There's been a lot of chat about him moving. I can tell you right now, he's very excited about it. He's talked to me a lot about extradition policies. I don't know why he was so interested in that, but he's on his way out. We've got Joe Cook with us tonight. It's very, very exciting. Let's get straight into it. So the portal is opening yet again, starting tomorrow. And I mean, let's just throw it out there. Let's just do Hot Take Monday. Sark's losing the room. I mean, let's just throw it out there. He's lost all control of his players. We're probably going to have a mass exodus of upwards of three people may leave this team. And I'd love to hear what you're hearing, Eric.
Yeah, there's going to be upwards of three or four people leaving. Texas right now is in a very bad situation, just like Georgia. They're going to be very selective in the portal. They're not going to lose a lot. Some of these other teams are in the fortunate position to need 12 or 13 players out of the portal. It makes for very exciting recruiting. But as we know, that's not how you want to run a program. You want to be as selective as possible. You want to have as few holes to fill as possible. And you want to lose players that weren't going to contribute in this upcoming season. And that's right where Texas finds itself. And it's testament to Steve Sarkisian's program building the last few years.
So, Joe, you generally matriculate and hang out around the dorms. What are you hearing on campus?
I don't know what you want me to hear on that front. But I kind of echo what Eric said. You look at what Billy Walton was. I mean, it was Billy Walton and Peyton Kirkland. Billy Walton comes from a great program at South Oak Cliff and even got some action last year, I think, against Baylor. That's where I pulled the picture for the article. But he's behind Trey Moore. He's kind of behind Colin Simmons now. Colton Vosick, Ethan Burke, different positions, of course, but so all at the edge. And that meant playing time was going to be hard to come by this year. Same thing applies for offensive line. I mean, I think there are like 18 offensive linemen in the program now, and 17 now with Peyton Kirkland heading out the door. He always seemed like somebody who, I don't know, just looking at his recruitment, looking at the way things went, this isn't surprising. I don't think that's an indictment of him. It's just him looking for opportunity and leaving a crowded room to find it.
Well, this is coming in from the chat already. Justin Wells is asking, Justin Wells, I like what you did there. Yeah, early guesses on Kirkland or Walton and where they might end up. You want to take this one, Eric? I mean, obviously, this is pure speculation.
Well, they can't transfer to SEC schools in this window. They can only do that in the winter window. So you got to rule out all the SEC schools, which is perfectly fine. Kirkland, being from Florida, still leaves the door open to two ACC programs with Florida State. If they're looking for help, you're normally looking for immediate help, and he's coming off an injury. But, man, that guy is giant and very quick. So I could see somebody taking a flyer on him. You've also got Miami down there. I'm sure Mario Cristobal, being an O-line guy, is going to be quite familiar with Kirkland. But, I mean, yeah, it's not going to be an SEC school. So, you know, it doesn't really matter as far as Texas goes. Billy Walton, you know, his family's got a lot – his family's played all over. He's a Muhammad, basically. So he's got family that's played at Oklahoma State, at Seattle, or at UW, I should say. So I bet some of those teams reach out to him, because I really do think that he's a quality player. It was just going to be on a longer curve for him. He's shown good pass rush moves on campus. There's always a priority for those guys. He's just got Colin Simmons ahead of him. And you know, by the time he's ready to go, Colin Simmons will be, you know, fully the man. You'll still have Colton Vasek there. So I understand this is the identity of the guys that are going to leave. They're going to be behind on the line of scrimmage behind on the depth chart and have to wait a couple of years.
Paul, we were talking before going live about what this does mean for the program. I mean, now we're in a position in a position that maybe Texas fans of a certain ilk might not be familiar with, and that is some security, some basis, or at least a base for which to build the program, where we're not as worried in this particular instance as we may have been in the past. What is your take on the state of where we're at right now, and how the transfer portal is demonstrating that state? That is to say, the lack of transfers and the consistency that we're able to maintain.
Sark is losing the program.
There it is. Okay.
2 out of 88, just by my calculations, that's 2.3% of the locker room.
Okay.
It's going to just snowball from there. We could lose upwards of 4-5 You're, even.
Oh, geez. Okay. I mean, all right.
We could lose 5 third teamers, LC. So what happens if the first teamer and the second teamer go down?
That's a good point.
We won't be so, you know, cocky about it then, will we? No, actually, I think this is part and parcel of having loaded depth charts. Peyton Kirkland is talented. So is Billy Walton. Both of those guys can go, and if they apply themselves, they can be starters. But they weren't going to be starters at Texas anytime soon. And that's just the nature of the beast. Billy Walton especially, I mean, he's a dynamic, explosive player. But they added similar-sized, more dynamic, more explosive players, right? And then you've got guys like Vosick, Sorrell, of course, Ethan Burke. They're much bigger sized defensive ends, much more substantial that, you know, Billy's not competing with them even. They're a different type of phylum, right, of defensive end. Yeah. So ultimately, he looked at it, and he's got to go figure out what he wants to do. So does he want to go play for TCU, SMU, be close to home, or does he want to go to Nevada? You know, he knows some folks there. Does he want to go try to dominate that level of competition and try to start right away where he might have an opportunity? And then Peyton Kirkland, I think, interestingly, he is an Orlando guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how he feels about home, but maybe UCF. You know, that could be an option for him. But I'm feeling some bigger programs will come calling for Peyton Kirkland because he does have some traits, and he just got a little bit behind the eight ball because of an injury. He's a little bit immature. I don't mean like as a person. I mean just physically immature, and that he hasn't fully grown into his body and being able to control it. But when he gets that all together, I've said it before, and I mean it, we'll know that this program has really arrived when we're not just losing guys in the portal, but we're losing guys who eventually develop and turn into becoming all conference or NFL players. And right. People say, how could you let Alvin Kamara transfer out of Alabama? Well, we had Derrick Henry is the answer, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how it works. That's how part of being a big boy program. The key is we're the ones, or Texas, I should say, Sarkisian is the one making that decision. And it's under, you know, good guidance. And, you know, he's shooting straight with guys and telling them what their future looks like. And that's what's going to happen.
I want to give some space to a friend of the program, Brett Nelson, who's coming in with a super chat. He's asking, and this is obviously forecasting into next year, who would you say are the top five must gets for 26? And obviously this is going to play a little bit into attrition, but I think these might be a little bit more clear as a result of what Paul just highlighted. The consistency in the program. We'll throw this one over to you, Eric, to start, and then we'll have Cookie jump in.
Yeah, I mean, it's really early for that class. We're talking about sophomores, so a lot of the bigger players have not developed and become the clear prospects they're going to be a year from now. But one obvious is John Turrentine, offensive tackle out of North Crowley. I think he's number 6 in his class. He's giant. He moves well. He carries his weight extremely well for his age. Comes from a football background. That's the one that they're going to want no matter what. And he's clearly a 5-star to me. As far as the rest of the in-state, the only other guy that really that I see right now that they have to get is Javion Osborne. And even then, running backs are pretty easy to come by. He just is really, really good. He's special. He's the best in-state running back in a while. Another guy I like is linebacker Kosi Okpala out of Mady Creek. Saw him in person a couple weeks ago. Long frame, going to fill out really nicely, but also plays off-ball linebacker already. So he's not just the guy that's playing off the edge and with a really simplified task that he's not going to play in college. So you can get a better evaluation of how he processes on the field. Jesse Ford is a very interesting athlete out of Arlington Martin. He plays both edge and tight end, and I could see him playing either in college. Jeff Banks offered him, so I could see that going for tight end. But also, Jeff Banks offers a lot of guys in that area. He could play edge. So those are guys that stand out to me. Oh, Tiki Hola out of Bastrop deserves mention, too. He's very high on the interior line board. He might even be right behind Jakeem Stewart, and Jakeem Stewart's going to be an absolute circus recruitment. Don't pay attention to that one until the last 5 minutes. So they'll probably want to get Tiki Hola from Bastrop wrapped up as soon as they can. Yeah, it's going to take a while with him, too, but I think they're in a good spot.
I was curious if you were going to put a running back into that must get category or approaching it just because of the way the position is, how good he recruits it, but you know, or to chart choice recruits it.
it's too early for anybody to really be a must get outside of turn time, really. I mean, am I worried about, you know, a quarterback in that class? No. Am I worried about not worried about any of these positions, because they're so fortunate to be in the position they are, to have such a stacked depth chart. The thing about Javian is it's going to be a sense of pride thing. You're not going to want to lose the top running back in the state. He's viewed as special. He's got the whole toolkit, size, power, speed, and choices on him. You know, he's probably choice's favorite back at all the backs in the country right now, regardless of class. So that's kind of why I put him at must get. There's going to be a protect the state borders mindset that the staff has with him. And he's just obviously going to translate to college. So even though running back is loaded in that cycle, he's the clearly the best one. And probably the best one in a while.
I want to thank Paratex for obviously the super chat. Thank you so much for that. We do appreciate those. Those do help us in our search committee to find Ian. So anything that you can contribute to that is greatly appreciated. This one goes to go to Paul here. Paul, this is Rick is telling that obviously one of the more stacked positions that we've had is at O-line and at edge. And those were two positions that were lacking for such a long time. And again, we've talked about the life cycle, specifically of the long half-life, as it were, of the offensive line. And now we're going into a period where Sark's best inherited position was defensive tackle, and now it's the thinnest. Do you agree that we're dangerously thin there?
No, I don't, actually. I don't think we're thin. I think we have a different – well, look, we just had a drop-off in talent, which you're going to have – when you have the most talented defensive tackle duo in college, all of college football, that's going to happen. Now, I think we're going to have a stylistic change, and or we need to have a stylistic change. And this is something we're going to talk about more when we do our roundtable. I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, I think I and both me and Ian very early were saying, like in January early, saying, hey, this new group of defensive tackles we have, they have attributes, but they're very different from Murphy and Sweat in what they're best at. And we have got to play a defensive style that suits what they do best. Right. And if we fail to do that, we try to treat these guys like anchors, and I'm talking about Vernon Broughton, Alfred Collins, it's not going to go great for us. It's going to take some potentially dynamic players and make them not play really good football because it's not their best use. So,
but are you seeing that? And just in terms of the coaching staff seems to be very amenable to highlighting scheme to talent. Is that what you're seeing?
We'll see. I've heard different things. And okay. So it's interesting, you know, practice is like a Rorschach test and it's where people want to put their attention. So I've had people whose opinions I respect go and observe a practice and they're like, oh, you know, these guys can't anchor at all. And they're trying to play them like anchors. And then other guys are like, no, they're letting them move around and they're playing it a little different, or no, they're just experimenting, or they know these guys don't anchor well. They know on third and two, they're going to need to. So they're trying to improve that. They know that these guys can shoot gaps. And so, you know, I'm hearing a lot of different stories. They'll be clarified a little bit maybe in the spring game, but I think they'll be clarified most sometime in August. Maybe September when we play Michigan, we'll really figure it out then. Right.
Right.
One of the things that he brought up was edge. And I think we talked about this maybe last week, but the sins of Todd Orlando were felt for a long time on this UT roster, because think about it, before Joseph Osai, who was like the last good defensive end, it was Jackson Jeffcoat, right? Maybe there was somebody in 15 or 16.
Did you see how he covered the running back on the wheel route, Joe?
But I mean, Omenihu
played off ball the year before.
Omenihu was after that's two, and that's just because that system did not really highlight or didn't even utilize edge players at some point. And then when they tried to pivot, they couldn't find guys, and that's why in 2021 Sark had to go to the portal for like Ray Thornton, Ben Davis, Ovia Gofu, because for so long that position had been basically just ignored in recruiting. Now it's not been ignored, especially when your defensive coordinator coaches that position, and it's bearing fruit now for the Longhorns. And as you can see with guys like Colin Simmons and even some other ones on the roster like Trey Moore.
What we're seeing now with the portal, it, are different approaches by different programs just in terms of roster management. And again, just to highlight some of the messaging that we're hearing that we've also been delivering is the idea that there's been consistency so far in the short term of Sark. And I'm wondering, moving forward, Horn 7 is asking, I mean, do we, at what point do we start drastically altering the number of high school recruits we take in? It's my impression that that's not really Sark's MO. He is very much a development guy. What's your take on that, Eric?
Yeah, you're going to go to the portal more often out of necessity, and you don't want necessity. You shouldn't have necessity at Texas, at a healthy Texas with a healthy roster and healthy NIL. You should definitely load up on the lines, the most scarce positions, and ones that are going to cost the most if you do have to go to the portal. Cornerback is one of those as well, although there's a lot more cornerbacks now than there used to be. It's still, you want to get the best players in high school and develop them. I wouldn't advocate going lower. It's not a good thing that as we started the show, it's not a good thing when A&M has to load up in the portal. It's not a good thing when Miami has to load up in the portal. They're doing that out of necessity. They're doing that because they missed on evaluation, or they had a lot of people leave early for whatever reason. Maybe some got caught up in coaching changes. Maybe some, like at A&M, 2-year contracts ran out. So you don't want to do it. I know fans get excited. They like the newness of the portal. Retainment is much more important, and Texas has been excellent at retainment than actually securing players through the portal. I think everybody's going to get a lesson on the importance of retainment when we see what Michigan does. If they're able to hold on to those two defensive tackles, I think at least Texas fans should have a greater appreciation for the amount of work that that Texas has done keeping guys around, even if it took another year for them to develop, like Devondre Sweat. That was a big development. We didn't know how big of a development that was, but you don't want to really load up through the portal. It's like NFL, where you want to build through the draft and supplement through free agency.
What do we, and this goes a little bit to scheme here, Paul, and we've talked about this, we've touched on this. So this might be a little bit of a repeat here, but what are you seeing or hearing just in terms about how our linebacker play specifically is going to change by way of recruiting and style of play with our new coaching staff?
Well, I think Hill, the middle linebacker, is going to be the most significant change, right? I mean, that's you're making him the center of the defense. You're making him the guy who's going to be a key run anchor. He's also going to be a blitzer.
But is that a natural development for him? I mean, was that going to happen regardless of who the coach was?
Well, it kind of has to. If he has ambitions to play in the NFL, he has to mature as an off the ball linebacker. It's the struggle and transition that LSU had last year with Harold Perkins, right? The difference is that Hill is a much stronger, much more robust, much more physical player than Perkins. And so I think he's a little more instinctive as well. And I think probably a little more in his playbook, if I had to guess. So you saw really Harold Perkins become sort of a non-entity for big stretches for LSU last year, because they moved him to off the ball linebacker and said, you know, he couldn't just line him up on the edge and say, sprint up the field and disrupt stuff. And so that's going to be a big development for him. That would have happened anyway, but I'm glad we have Nansen being able to replace Choate, because that is a position that, you know, a lot of people believe linebackers are born, not taught.
Right.
But you could teach them. And, you know, David Benda, I think, is testament to that. I think he was about as sort of confused on a football field as I've ever seen a linebacker be back in 2021 and parts of 2022. But he played good ball last year, and I think he's going to play even better ball this year, just simply from teaching and learning and maturing in the game. So we're not reinventing the wheel at linebacker with Nansen, but I do think he's going to bring some invigoration in terms of scheme. I think he's going to be a very important idea guy for Pete Kwiatkowski, which I think Kwiatkowski was lacking. You know, Ian has actually done a really nice job explaining that in SEC coaching rooms, there's not a lot of friction and debate and discussion. It's basically like you got your coordinator who does the X's and O's, then everyone else is a recruiter, right? And they might be able to teach their position as well, right? But, you know, Kwiatkowski was talking about in the West Coast, you're much more collaborative. You've got guys saying, hey, why don't we try this? And you argue stuff and you shoot down each other's ideas and you all come together and agree and go forward, right? I think that Nansen's going to be really helpful for Kwiatkowski. You know, Nansen is a big proponent of dime or even 7 DBs sometimes. He's a big proponent of movement on your D-line if you don't have the Devondre Sweats and Byron Murphys, right? He's a big proponent of creating pressure by you know, coordinating your edge, your TNE stunts with a blitz that's delayed. You know, PK, I've criticized him on this and I'll stick by it because I'm right. I don't think his stunts and all of his stuff is that great, to be honest. It's gotten better since he's been at Texas, but I think it's stuff that can be improved. I think he will really benefit from another guy in the room with strong opinions and ideas. And the cool thing about Pete is I don't think he's super threatened by people who have other ideas. I mean, the guy had freaking Gary Patterson. You know, right. I mean, if you could deal with Gary Patterson, you could deal with anyone, right? I mean,
seated control.
Jimmy Morgan's coming in with a super chat, and he's lobbing bombs. So let's get into it. And this is specifically for Eric and Joe. Jimmy's asking, I don't understand why Aggie is considered a top school. I mean, what have they ever done to get respect? That's question one. Is it just about NIL or what is it? Can you please explain? And again, thank you for the super chat, Jimmy. This is a softball for you guys to basically just rag on the school slightly north to Texas.
Well, I think one thing that
I'll let you start, Cookie.
One thing that's maybe forgotten when we see the helmets on the field, watch the bands, all that stuff, is that often these guys' lives is just about the football facility. And we all know the weird stuff that kind of A&M can do, Corps of Cadets, all the different things. But if you're living in a football facility, which a lot of these guys do, sometimes they don't even go. They take like online classes. You can be insulated from that. So think about it that way. Big school. And I'm not trying to just like sing A&M's praises, but you know, I'm just trying to identify that it's still a school that has fantastic facilities. It's still a school that's got a fervent fan base, and yeah, they could be doing weird stuff, but it's still 100,000 people there. And to, you know, a kid from Houston,
did you marry an Aggie? Is that what are you talking about? Why
I'm just trying
this?
To. I'm just trying to.
Okay. Okay. Fine. There's some passion.
There's a little devil's advocate, but I mean, it's a big state school. It's by a big metropolitan area. They have a crazy devoted fan base, and football players.
Are you writing the brochure?
This is embarrassing.
This is unacceptable. Jeez. Wow.
Hey, they don't win, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, it doesn't say much that they haven't won. It says a lot that they haven't won yet, but they haven't lacked for want to. They want to win as bad as anybody, more so than Texas did for a very long time. They wanted to win more. So they never lacked for money. They never lacked for resources, new facilities. The SEC move was good. They're exceptional promoters of the SEC. And they're in a talent-rich area. So it's always going to be somewhat easy to recruit. Yes, there's a second team in the state. But a lot of times they're the first team in the state, depending on how a kid is wired. Like we're all culturally different. Like we have different places that we gravitate to. Not everybody wants to live in Austin. Not everybody wants the glitz and glamour of being a UT football player. There was a long time when a lot of hard-nosed football players thought that UT was soft and a soft place to be. Now I think Sarkisian has laid waste to that. I think Tom Herman actually did a pretty good job of building a tougher culture too. But there's just stark differences, and everybody's wired differently. So there are good things going on at A&M depending on how you're wired. You know, when I moved to Texas from Los Angeles to tiny industry Texas, population 425, I knew that I was much more like people in Austin and UT than in College Station. But you know, I had a lot of friends that felt exactly different. Now I will say I've got a friend that called me tonight. His son is going to A&M. He played baseball at UT. His other son just scratched and clawed his way into UT after going through the CAP program where you go to a different school first, get the grades. His other son refused to do that and is going to A&M. And he's half heartbroken and half ticked off. But I'm like, you've got the purse strings here, buddy. But yeah, so I mean, it's just you can grow up in the same house and go to A&M. It's wild. A&M has good things going for it. It just depends on how you're wired.
Can I take a quick crack at this, LC? Do you mind?
No, I really want you to. Please do.
So Charles de Gaulle once said about Brazil, it has great potential and always will.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And that's, he could have been talking about Texas A&M. And the real answer to this is they have never done anything. Jimmy Morgan is exactly right. However, they care. And it's kind of what Joe and Eric were talking about. They care intensely and they do have the potential. And so if you want to just throw out the A&M part of it and the weirdness and all that stuff that Joe was trying to say that you can kind of avoid, if you're just on the athlete track, think about the state of Florida. Okay.
Jeez.
The state of Florida has dominated college football. It never dominated college football in the 70s and most of the 80s. But then all of a sudden, Miami came out of nowhere. Why? Right? Because of the location, you have access to the athletes, and then it became an it school. Okay? The Florida Gators, they don't have a good football tradition at all. If you know anything about the history of college football, they're irrelevant for all of their history until Steve Spurrier got there. And then he unleashed it, right? Florida State, it was like basically a woman's teacher's college, right? Bobby Bowden single-handedly created Florida State, okay? So the point is, there is a precedent for if your school cares enough, you have a ton of resources and you're located in the right spot, Texas, Florida, Georgia, right? Eventually, you'll stop tripping over yourself and you will put it together. And so that really is the answer to you, Jimmy Morgan. They've never done anything, but they do have the potential. And potential, all you need to do is stumble into it right. Make the right hire, get the right quarterback, the right whatever, and you can break through. And that's what A&M always has the potential. Go ahead. But
they also tend to step on rakes because they want to win so bad and they'll overpay for Jimbo Fisher. Yeah, of course. So they are their own worst enemies. So
they are their own worst enemies. They care too much, right? They need to be a little cooler.
And I would say Florida State was more of a Burt Reynolds school than a women's teaching school.
You're damn right it was.
Okay. It was a Mac Brown school.
Yeah. All right. You were doing really well, Paul. All right.
That's where I played my ball.
One of the things that we've talked about is the scrimmage we just had on Saturday. The offense was really kind of humming there in the red zone, is at least what we've been reporting. They were starting a little bit further from the red zone, but they were getting in there and actually getting some scores, which was a little bit of a problem for us last year. Paratex has come in with another super chat, and he's asking the really vital questions here. How do we replace Sweat and Murphy? Right? We've talked about that, but he's not concerned about defense. He wants to know big man TDs. Who do we see getting the most big man TDs this year? And what's the over under? 2-3 big man TDs? What are we thinking? Again, we'll start with you, Cookie. I mean, first of all, how many big man TDs do you think the season holds?
I could see that. Okay, so where does Malik Ogbo factor into this?
Because if he still does dead air for the broadcasting, six-man. I'd like to thank everyone in broadcasting for the dead air. Whenever you're ready, Joe.
Am I muted? I'm going. No,
Joe's talking.
Yeah. I think Malik Ogbo is a good candidate. So I'm wondering how he factors into this. If he does the sixth offensive line thing, it could be somebody else. He could kind of go back and start working more at offensive line. But I think that's a part of the offense that they like. Alfred Collins, back when he was at Cedar Creek, which is not a very – you see it pretty often going by 71 – out to Hyatt Lost Pines Resort, but there's not a lot of football talent there, and he had to do a lot. He played some double duty. He was a tight end, so maybe they want to do that with him. But I feel like the offense will be, I don't know. They tried to cram it in the end zone last year, and it didn't work despite having those guys, so maybe they go to the drawing board a little bit on that front. But I think Malik Ogbo, as someone by design, could do it. He caught a pass in the Sugar Bowl. And then if they wanted to put Alfred Collins in there, maybe he's the one that gets the opportunity.
Great. Eric, what's the over-under for you?
0.5.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I don't see them going that route. The guy that I would want out there, you need more focused on defense than anything else. They'll want to get a lot more trust in Dre Bledsoe to be good on defense before they start tinkering with him on offense. I just don't think I don't think the roster's in the same place as it was last year. Now, you know, if Agbo plays tight end, I need to check on that. I haven't heard about him at all. You know, they like the tight ends that they have this year. They're a little bit deeper with Amari Nyblack and Juan Davis returning and having a good spring, a Gas Camp Award candidate. And then also Washington, the true freshman, they're getting a lot of snaps. So I'm not bullish on any jumbo guys getting a touchdown this year.
Fair enough. Could happen. Paul, I mean, this is just reeks of optimism for you.
No, this time has passed. We're not doing the big man touchdown thing.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay. Can Juan Davis be used as a quarterback in the red zone? That's what Scott Sheridan wants to know.
That guy's barely played at all. And you're not going to just say, all right, you've been here for 4 years now. It's time to play quarterback. I just don't think that there's the need for it. You know, you'd probably put a running back there if you're going to do it. It's not like you can ask Juan to pass. Juan played high school quarterback a little bit, but not to the degree that you're like, okay, you're going to drop him back and have him hitting targets over the middle.
He was the best athlete on the field version of quarterback, not the, okay, let's drop back and see if we can we pick up some yards with Juan leading the passing offense type of
quarterback. Let's get this one from David Williams with about Michael Terry.
Yeah, I've got that on there. That's queued up next. Well spotted, Eric. So where do you think UT is with Michael Terry? Obviously, we've heard wanting to play wide receiver. Yeah. Mr. Williams has it viewed more as an athletic DeAndre McNeil.
Finessing. I don't think Texas is pushing all that hard because they do like him as an athlete more on the defensive side than on offense. It's just, you know, everywhere they like him, they've got guys that they've got clear tape on, much clearer evaluation. So I've seen some people compare him to a tight end. Look who they're after at tight end. Kiardi Armstrong is an absolute stud. They've already got Emory Winston committed. They're after a couple other guys that are really, really good. The running backs, they're in a great spot with a couple running backs. He's not a wide receiver in this offense. Safety, I think he'd probably be a tweener as a safety linebacker. And then, you know, you don't really want a tweener at linebacker unless you've got an extensive tape on him, like Maurice Blackwell. If you go back and watch Maurice Blackwell's tape, you could tell that he's going to be awesome at whatever he does as long as he, has the body type to fit the position. Terry's a much more bigger question. Now, if you want a guy to go win games for you on Friday night, he's a hell of a pick. As far as assigning a position, he's got to play a position. He's not going to just go out there and be an athlete in college. It's hard to see where he fits in the class. When he loves Texas, which so it's a little sad, but you know that's just harsh reality of it.
What are our thoughts? This is from Thomas 45. Do we have any thoughts on Bill Norton?
He's productive. He was alongside Tia Savea in Johnny Nansen's defense. He was good enough to get a scholarship offer from Georgia for whatever that's worth now, which is probably not that much. But I think I talked with Ian Boyd about him and was like, hey, did you notice when he was studying Tia Savea, I texted him as soon as Norton appeared in the portal. I was like, hey, did you ever notice the 6'6 white guy playing by him? Yeah, he's pretty good. So, but like we had mentioned, the market is going to be crazy for defensive tackles, and especially for him, not only because he's a defensive tackle with playing experience and with some solid stats and solid production, but he's also not in the SEC. And there are multiple SEC schools who desperately need some defensive tackles. I don't think Texas desperately needs it, but they would like to add and bolster that room. There are some schools that are desperately after them. That includes, I think, Oklahoma, LSU's probably in that boat, Auburn's probably in that boat, maybe a few others. So he's going to be sought after, but the market may be a little bit more active than his actual quality of player.
I would jump all over it as long as it doesn't preclude you from taking somebody else that comes in afterwards.
And how good are our coaching staffs and the GM departments now at really nailing the probability of that?
Sometimes, a lot of times they know in advance, you know, right. They're not guessing, you know, they know there's the whole network working behind the scenes where, you know, everybody's got a good idea. Everybody's talking to each other. Texas NIL is very well informed on the whole landscape behind the scenes. They know what it's going to take to get a lot of these guys. They know what it costs to get X player from whatever school. You know, they're pretty dialed in. They don't always know, and that's a bad thing. When they don't know, it's usually not a good sign.
Right. First of all, this has been a great opportunity for the super chats and the chats really flowing. We want to really thank you for that. More information, obviously, this type of community is available at InsideTexas.com. If you use the promo code IT1, you will get 2 months for $1, which is going to bring you through, obviously, the spring and into the heavy summer recruiting season. So please check that out. As these questions are rolling in, one thing that we really wanted to know, again, this was based on information that happened prior to the cast, was that that Paul is really into gladiators. And I'm wondering if you could share with the folks at home, Paul, a really cool gladiator fact that you picked up this weekend at the public library with your son.
Sure. Not all gladiatorial bouts ended in the gladiator's death. Oh. So we have found, we don't actually know that we know it was done by the turning of thumbs, but because we weren't there, we don't actually know what the symbol was. We decided it was this or that, but there are famous gladiators that they've recovered, like their tombstones, right? Their headstone. And it says things like flamma, the flame in Latin. record 21 wins, 4 losses, 2 draws. So the guy lost or drew 6 times total and wasn't killed. So if two gladiators fought really well, one, you know, gets bested or put in a tough position, they typically spare that loser's life and let him fight again if he's done it, you know, done it well. But if he hasn't, or if you've got a really bloodthirsty emperor, they'd still order the death. And the depiction of Gladiator with Russell Crowe and Commodus, mm-hmm. who played by Joaquin Phoenix, that was a real thing. Commodus used to fight in gladiatorial bouts, but the belief was that he would do things to give himself an advantage, like stabbing Russell Crowe in the liver right before their fight, stuff like that, right?
You just brought up the documentary Gladiator, and one of the questions I've always had is, were all gladiators Australian, or was that, did they come from different places?
New Zealand.
Right.
And Australia. That makes sense. Russell Crowe is, I think, actually a Kiwi who moved to Australia. But
Wow.
Is Connie Nielsen American?
Connie Nielsen is not American.
Well, she was a Roman princess, right? Or whatever she was, you know.
Oh, right. No, that's a really good point, Eric. Okay. Okay.
Different brand of barbarian.
You come for the football and you get the gladiatorial knowledge. This is all free, by the way. Thank you so much for taking in all of this. Now, Joe, we did have a question for you. Thank God. Here we go. Thank you, Rick. This vamping was getting ridiculous. Rick has a question or a comment. So Blues freakish speed, right? UT's offense in the red zone. So he's a matchup nightmare. How do we see the implementation of Blue in the red zone this next year?
I think he gives you a little bit more of a multifaceted skill set than maybe we were anticipating last year. He's at 200 or so pounds, and while he's not a bruiser, and that's probably something they want CJ Baxter to be a little bit more of, it's still stocky. I mean, he's not tall. I think he's either 5'11 or 6 foot. So he carries that weight well.
6 foot is very tall.
He still has that speed.
Yes, it
is. And I think he can give you not only like between the tackles ability, but also he could split him out and let him maybe run some routes against some linebackers and clear some space out for him to do that. So I think the way they're going to use Blue is, you know, I think they're going to make him just a conventional running back, and you in the way that Steve Sarkisian does that, throwing the ball to him, sometimes splitting him out wide. But in the red zone, I mean, we saw them give Jaden Blue the ball at Iowa State on fourth down. And that's a hard-nosed defense. I don't know about how talented it is, but it's a hard-nosed defense, tough to run against. And they trusted him in that scenario after Jonathan Brooks went down, obviously. So I think that's something they may be amenable to doing here in this season.
Josh Holden is bringing a very important question that I think needs to be highlighted purely based on the information that was delivered to us earlier. All right, who are we taking at QB in their prime? Are we taking Burt Reynolds? Or are we taking Tom Selleck? Oh my God. This is the mustache all-star team. Okay. And you had a mustache earlier this year, Joe, so you can probably relate to this. Who are we taking? And bear in mind, Burt's a running back. So we need to be very, very clear about that.
I actually am an expert on this.
I don't doubt that. The mustaches or this particular subject?
I'm an expert on monkey feet, but also flavor savers, whatever you want to call it. But more that Tom Selleck was a collegiate athlete, but he was a basketball player.
Okay.
He played basketball for USC. And in fact, he was known for his dunking. He was like a fan favorite, but he was also a bench player. So not a star. Now, if you're talking about players that they've depicted, Burt Reynolds famously portrayed Paul Crewe, the NFL quarterback, in the Longest Yard. Tom Selleck in Magnum PI, if you'll recall, the backstory of Magnum is that he was the starting quarterback for the Naval Academy and threw for like 350 and got invited to an all-star game and stuff like that, and it was a star quarterback. So this is actually a very difficult choice. Do you like the classic 6'4" pocket passer with a beautiful mustache and a hairy chest? Or do you like the more dual threat that Burt Reynolds represented in Paul Crewe? Tough call. If you want to throw in an X factor, you've got special agent Johnny Utah, who threw the game-winning touchdown in the Rose Bowl for Ohio State and blew out his knee. He was headed for the NFL, 100%. But he decided, as one of the most famous players in college football, to become an undercover FBI agent, which is it's kind of like Major Applewhite going and working for the DEA. No one would ever recognize him. So
that to me
is actually the correct answer is Johnny Utah in his prime. And did you, I mean, even with the knee injury, did you see what he did in that beach game? Destroyed the armed robbers, made Bodie look like a fool.
Yep.
That's a very good point. I think sometimes we discount the athleticism that is displayed in that film. So thank you for that.
I am an FBI agent.
Terrible actor.
Shots fired.
You just called John Wick a terrible actor?
Nicolas Cage levels are bad.
Whoa!
Oh my God.
How dare you?
It's been a long week for Eric. He is just look how fired up he is over there. He's got his skis ready to go. He's all jow, just giving it to him. All right, fine. Well, there's a lot of heat coming from the Nalin household. How was little Nino Nalin's soccer game? How'd that go?
Oh, man, they lost 1-0 on the last second goal. Their goalie got so bored, he just decided to leave his job.
Stripped it out.
Yeah, man, I almost snuck out there.
So wait, did he literally leave his post for the orange slices?
Yeah, he went out there. He got way out of position. He was tired. He played great until then, kept us in the game. My son had one shot on goal. They barely ever played on that side of the field. Drilled the goalie straight in the face, which I thought should have been worth half a point. But if he goes just a little bit, he's 5 years old. He doesn't know what he's doing. But just drilled the goalie in the face. They had to stop the game for a few minutes. So I got some satisfaction out of it, but I would have preferred he just hit the game winner.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, that's nice. You get to do some athletic things with your kid. Paul takes his kid to the library and it's right, Joe. It's fine, Joe. Yeah. It's fine. So it's nothing.
You'll have sex
about.
At some point.
Yeah, you have time. It's going to be fine. It's newlyweds. I'm sure it'll happen for you one of these days.
Let's finish on some football.
No, absolutely not. Okay. What are you looking forward to? So this is the real question, and this is the total speculation thing. So tomorrow, obviously big day. Now, Texas, as you've highlighted, Eric, you know, we obviously have our spring game on Saturday, so we may not have folks hitting the portal until after that game. What are you looking for in the next 24 to 48 hours as someone that absolutely is watching this stuff like a hawk that is really going to dictate where Texas is going? Are there specific schools outside of Michigan you're looking at, or what are you hearing?
Any school, I feel like you're about to cut me off and drop the hammer, but
no, I'm not going to. I promise, my hands are away from
any school that has good defensive tackles. And, you know, it's got to be a school outside of the SEC. But as Joe mentioned earlier, everybody's buyers right now, including the teams that are trying to keep their players. You know, so it's a buyer's market for everybody, but everybody is a buyer. It's a weird little juxtaposition. Georgia needs defensive tackles. LSU, I think Ohio State's good. USC could use another guy. They just lost Isaiah Rakes after they had him for about 5 minutes after he went to left A&M. That's what I'm looking for. Who goes in, man? That's what really matters because Texas isn't really looking for many positions. On the UT side, I don't expect them to lose anybody that would offer snaps this season. Outside of maybe one player. There's one player that I'm watching that I would rather stay, but it wouldn't be, you know, the end of the season or anything. But other than that, you know, I should be selling excitement right now. We have to wait and see who comes in the portal before I think it really warrants a lot of fan excitement.
That's the same question to you, Paul. Is there anything, and again, my hands are away from that. Is there anything in particular that you're looking for over the next week to see how this is going? Again, it's we are in the fortunate position that this may not be a very exciting cycle for us.
Honest to God, the coolest, most cold-blooded thing you could have done is drop it when you asked Eric about his son's soccer game.
That would have been amazing. No, the thought really did cross my mind.
Oh, God. That would have been great. Hey, by the way, David, Williams David saying that if your son was doing at least three CrossFit workouts a week, he would have scored. So yeah. Something to think about.
Hey, I've got him working out in the gym right now. It's quite
right
it's
now. Quite it's so late.
Yeah.
Hey man, can I offer? I mean, of course, I'm going to get completely faced on this and get smoked. I hope I do. It would be awesome. But hey, Michigan's got a pretty good team culture. I think we're in fantasy world. Maybe on these DTs transferring out. I don't think that's happening. So
the time to strike was in January.
I'm not trying to be the guy to douse your dreams. And probably for the sake of the site, I should say I have a special insight on which one's going to come to Texas. But I think these guys have a pretty good culture. Now, they might regret staying at Michigan. Who knows? But I think they're, I don't think we're getting those guys. I don't think that's happening. And I think honestly, Texas, I can understand if they go get a defensive tackle in the portal, but I don't think they're going to get anything better than a body. I'll be honest. And so I just think that's the reality. So sorry to be talking real with y'all, but that's kind of how I feel. I don't think there's a magic bullet at defensive tackle.
But even another good rotational player with experience would be good as far as being able to rotate and keep guys fresh. So I think
yeah, there is, I'll take it.
Yeah, there's added value in that. I'd be excited about Bill Norton, but it's not going to, you know, fans are stargazers, man. They want the guy that that nobody else can get. So we'll see. I'm kind of fading one of those Michigan guys going into. I think the NIL, Michigan NIL people just have way too much time to figure this out. Michigan is filled with plenty of smart people. Now, they've lacked motivation at times. You know, no Aggies are over there. I think they've had some similar issues as Texas predating Jim Harbaugh, but they seem to have things figured out right now.
Well, that's all we have for you this evening. So thank you very much for checking in on this. Again, the portal is opening tomorrow at 12:01. So please stick to your screens and obviously check out InsideTexas.com. That special that we're running right now is IT1 is your promo code. That's going to give you 2 months for $1 where you can check out articles written by these three fine folks. Thank you so much for your time.